And welcome to Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He is Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Meadow with you for the next 60 minutes. Two ways for you to interact with us here on the program, 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. We'll get to your phone calls. We'll get to your tweets. So OTAs underway today as the team will work out and obviously continue the competition at various positions as they get ready for training camp and so forth following rookie minicamp. So the rookies and the veterans are together for the first time. No contact, though, during this period. But, you know, this gives an opportunity for the rookies who stood out an opportunity to now gel and mesh in with those veterans.
Yeah, the Giants have been out on the practice field, actually inside the facility here at the Quest Diagnostic Center because of the rain. Folks, if you're not from Jersey or not in the New York metropolitan area, we've had some steady rain since about 4 o'clock in the morning, I believe. It started coming down, and so there's no way they could be out on the grass field. So about a little less than a half hour ago, Coach McAdoo and the players went outside into the field house, and they have started their drills. If you go to Giants.com, and I believe on Twitter as well, we'll have some snapshots and maybe some quick videotape captions. I guess they call it Snapchat. You know, I don't know anything about social media.
You got the terminology
Snapchat.
Down. Don't sell yourself short.
We'll have some of those snaps up there for you, and you'll get a chance to see some of the guys working out there. These are voluntary, by the way, non-mandatory OTAs. So if for some strange reason over the course of the next several days you hear, oh, so-and-so wasn't there, whatever, again, not mandatory. Mini camp is mandatory. That comes your way in the middle of June. That you've got to be here for unless you've got an excuse and you've been approved to have that excuse. So that's something to keep in mind as well. But you know what, Lance? The best thing about this is the first time during the offseason that the offense and defensive players can actually take the field at the same time. See, that's what's different about this.
Yeah.
And then, of course, during minicamp, there are lesser restrictions on the meetings and what they can do on the field. Still no contact. But offensive and defensive players can now do walkthroughs and stuff on the field at the same time. And that's kind of a big deal for all the new guys who are coming in for the first time.
Now, given the fact that this is the first time for a lot of things, as you just alluded to, Paul, we figured the question for today's program is you get to look at free agency, the offseason program as a whole. So what is your favorite offseason move? The newest face to join the Giants. It could have been a free agency move. It could be somebody they brought in via the draft. It could be an undrafted free agent that you really like that they brought in that is going to have an opportunity to compete for a roster spot. So let's throw out our two, and then we're going to open up the phone lines at 201-939-4513. We want to hear from you. We'll also get into all other topics that you want with respect to OTAs. Who jumps out to you as your favorite offseason move?
Well, for me, and I know a lot of folks out there are going to want to take one of the offensive guys because, let's face it, the Giants' offense needed some improvement off of last season. However, I'm going to go defense because I think if the Giants had not re-signed JPP, as things turned out in the draft and with free agency being as sparse as it was at the defensive end position, I think the Giants really did themselves a lot of good by re-signing JPP.
I'm going to follow your trend on defense, too, because here's the thing. You could make the argument that a lot of people wanted them to add offensive weapons, Paul, but it's just as important to keep the defense intact, is it not? Considering you're coming off a season in which your defense went from the bottom of the rankings to the top, and you were top 10 in just about every statistical category. So I'm going to go with another player that they re-signed, not as big, not as well-known as JPP, but bringing back Keenan Robinson, to me, was an integral move considering what he did for this defense last season, and they like that versatile linebacker who could cover tight ends, could get down on the field in coverage, and I think he made strides in that area considering what the production was like in previous years.
You know, they really haven't had a coverage tight end maybe since Jaquan Williams when he first came here as a rookie, and then he's, you know, got a lot of injuries and stuff, but when he was out there and able to do things, he was about as physically gifted as a coverage linebacker as they had. So I understand that. It's something they haven't had for a while, so you certainly make a good point. Folks out there, I know you're probably going to think about Brandon Marshall. You certainly have the right to call out Evan Ingram, the number one pick in the tight end who's expected to make a huge impact on this team. There are certainly other options for this question, But, you know, we're certainly curious to see the different names you guys want to throw at us.
Even Dalvin Tomlinson, I think, is another decent one, considering he has an opportunity to fill the void left behind by Jonathan Hankins.
He should be the starter.
Yeah.
You know, by every stretch of the imagination, he will win that job and become the guy next to Snacks trying to hold the interior of this defense together. So certainly he would be a guy you'd want to consider at least.
All right, let's open up the phone lines. 201-939-4513, Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. He's Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Meadow. Thanks so much for spending part of your day with us. How about Oren in Richmond gets us going? Oren, what's happening?
How you guys doing, man? I'm really excited for OTAs to start, man. Do you know if everybody's there and all that? Like, did everybody show up?
Well, they're practicing right now in the field house. We're here in the studio, so it would be impossible for us to go through that.
Also, yeah, I wouldn't know. My bad.
No, that's all right.
Yeah.
We got our studio here, as nice as it is. As nice as it is.
In an ideal world, Paul could love to be in two spots at once, but we have not duplicated him yet, so we're still working on that.
Well, I tried that, but the government said cloning me would be actually a danger to the rest of the planet.
Well, that's why the government is smart in that regard.
Yes.
But what else you got for us, Oren?
I just wanted to say I feel like our team will be really good. The only thing that I feel like that would hold us back is the running game and the offensive line. If those are fixed, I feel like we can go all the way, at least to the NFC Championship game. That's how far I feel like we can get if built all those factors. You know, if the offensive line plays better and Eric Flowers plays like a first round pick.
Well, the O-line is certainly a big part of that offense moving forward and also gaining continuity. And remember, it was 2 years ago where, you know, the offensive line had its fair share of issues. The Giants were still putting up the points, though. Let's not forget about that in 2015. What happened in 2016 is the fact that the points went down. That, to me, was the biggest difference, Paul. And I'm not saying that the offensive line is not an area that you want to improve on, but 15, they were up there in terms of scoring offense. The problem is, though, it was not duplicated in 2016.
Well, the red zone was the biggest difference.
Specifically, yeah.
Which, of course, goes back to the running game not being what it needs to be and the O-line not being what it needs to be. It also, to some degree, went to the receivers and the tight ends not being as proficient getting open in the red zone as they had been in previous years. So there are a lot of reasons why the points were down in 2016. But I'll say this, and again, we talk about the O-line all the time on this program. The Giants' offensive line just has to be improved and has to be good. They don't have to be great. They don't even have to be very good. They certainly don't have to be among the top five or six in the NFL. No, that you don't need that to win, okay? They just have to be good. That's it. From being average, I think it's fair to say they were probably about average, because how many teams in this league will tell you they need to improve their offensive line? Probably about 75% of them?
Well, I would say specifically in terms of running the football is where the improvement, because you remember, you're talking about bottom five in rushing yards per game. That's below average.
Well, isn't that interesting, though? And I did a comment about on Twitter on this a couple weeks ago. Giants are actually 20th in the league in rushing. If you just considered their backfield, where they really fell is because their quarterback doesn't run. So there were a bunch of other teams that pass them because they have running quarterbacks.
Mobile quarterbacks that salvage plays.
And that's simply scrambling ability and quarterback options. And, you know, so the truth of the matter is that's a skewed number. And when I thought about it, I absolutely agree with it, because you have so many of these running quarterbacks nowadays who do skew that number. It doesn't mean you're a great running football team if you have a quarterback who's skewing the number. That's not what we're talking about when you say you have to be a good, solid running football team. Hell, the Giants ran the ball great in 1986, and Phil Simms was not a running quarterback. You know what I'm saying? So the truth of the matter is the Giants, I think it was 20th was the number that I saw in terms of the running backs. How did they do as a collective unit running the football? So figure they're right on the cusp of being in the bottom third, okay? Well, that's more fair.
As a team, though, just to at least compare what you threw out, 29th they finished as a team last season, and that was just over 88 rushing yards per game. Then I also think what's also important to throw out here is the average yards per carry, too, which is also an indication of how successful your team is. The Giants were 30th in that department, 3.5 yards per carry. So you talk about as a team, per carry, bottom five in the league. If you want to take the quarterbacks out, it certainly goes up slightly.
And the numbers here, here's what I would want to point to, okay? This is by yards per carry. Go by yards per game.
Yards per game is this
guy. And this is what I want to tell you folks, all right? I've often said many, many times you would love to be up in the 125, 130 range, but that would put you in the top five of the league.
You don't have to necessarily
That good, but you better be able to run the ball about 110 yards a game.
Well, and that would put you middle of the pack.
And that's what you got to do. That's what you got to do.
And I think every team in an ideal world, if 32 teams, if you could be 15th or 16th in the NFL, you'll take that.
And that's where the Giants got to get to. Can they run the ball for about 110, 115, in that area, 110, 115 yards a game? If they can do that, I guarantee you the red zone production and the point production will improve. Guaranteed. You can put your mortgage on that. Guaranteed.
Well, teams will certainly have to respect the run the more consistent you show your ability to do that on the ground. Now, in terms of the points, last year the Giants averaged just over 19 points per game. That was 26th in the NFL. Then you go to 2015, two seasons.
It's like 27.
They were 6th in the NFL, nearly 27, just over 26 points per game. Yeah. We're talking about a touchdown difference between 2015 and 2016. That's huge.
So, you know, just be good. That's all. Just be good. And that's good enough to make this team a contender.
Let's head back to the phone lines. Abdul is in Minnesota. Abdul, what's happening?
Hey, guys.
How are we doing?
So my favorite move in the offense is not one player, per se. It's just that I think they've gotten a lot more competition on the offensive line. They got Fugler, from San Diego?
Yeah, DJ Fugler.
And then they drafted Bisnawati. And then those two guys, the unsigned free agents, the guy from USC, and I think another tackle they got. I think they got
– You like Wheeler a lot, then.
Players.
You like Wheeler? You like Wheeler?
I like Wheeler, yep. And okay. I think they got another guy, one other guy from Tennessee or something like that, they got as another tackle. But either way, I think they've gotten enough player people out there that it could actually add competition to the offensive line. That you're not just kind of filling in people just because that's the only body out there. You know, I think Bisnawati and Fugo will push Hart and Jerry. Maybe the guy Fila might push Flowers. There's more competition, and I think that only make the team better. So I think adding those players is my favorite offensive, my favorite offseason move.
Okay.
Which leads you back to something else. I was listening to Friday's show last night, and Paul, you were talking about having a big running back, you know, to finish out a game. But my issue with the Giants is more their offensive line. Like, when was the last time a Giants offensive lineman moved someone out of a hole? Like, I don't remember watching a game last year and seeing, you know, our best lineman, Pugh. He doesn't move anyone. You know, he doesn't let them maybe penetrate, but he does not move anyone backwards, right? So I think last year, you know, not having a fullback was probably more detrimental than anything, you know, that caused our drop off of the running game. Because our own line on its own just really opened up made big holes. I think having a fullback there helps much more than, you know, say, having a better offensive line. Does that make any sense?
Well, I will say this to you. The Giants don't have a power offensive line. That's obvious.
Right.
It's a technique-oriented offensive line. So you're not going to get a lot of guys getting pushed 3 yards backwards on defense against this O-line. It's just not going to happen. What they want to be able to do is just create a slicing space for a running back to get through to make his plays. They're not going to bully people and just, you know, push them backwards. So don't ask for that because that's not what they're designed to do. What I will say to you is this.
Well,
I would love to have it, but I can't ask for it anymore because it's not here. You know, I think we'd all love a Mercedes-Benz, but not all of us can have one.
Well, Abdul, I mean, your point about the fullback, this is what I will say. I mean, I agree with everything Paul just said about it being a more technique offensive line, but if you do have the fullback, you know, as long as the technique offensive line is opening some holes, the fullback, I think, can help the running back get to the second layer of the defense.
Yes, exactly.
More often than not. And I think that's what you were alluding to in terms of your commentary, which I would agree with you there. But to say that, the one thing, though, that I don't agree with is to say that if the Giants had Will Johnson fully healthy last season, let's say in an ideal world, that the Giants' running game would go from 29th to, like, top five, I'm not willing to go that far. I don't think it would have made that big of a difference.
I was watching the Giants highlights, and how many times a linebacker came in and filled a hole, right?
Cause the, I know.
They would read the pulling guard, you know, especially, I guess, against Cowboys. Lee was in the hole before the tackle was able to pull.
Look at it this way. You don't have to sell me on the value of a fullback. I've seen Maurice Carthon, Madison Hedgecock, Jim Finn. I've seen all these guys get it done and help their tailbacks have 1,000-yard seasons. You don't have to sell me on that. I'm with you. What I want is a power offensive line that's going to knock people off the ball, but that's not here. They don't have that. So, again, there's more than one way to skin a cat.
That being said, having a slasher, having a person hitting a hole faster, right? Instead of having a plodding big back that might need a big hole, so, you know what I mean? Having a slasher like the two backs we have with a fullback might fit our running game better.
I agree with you for the most part, but there will be times when you've got to get that 1 yard. And, boy, it would be really good to have that Mack truck just push the pile. Who in the Giants running back core is going to push the pile on a 3rd-and-1? Just throw out a name because there's not any.
Yeah, well.
There's not.
Even when we had Brandon Jacobs, we couldn't get that yard either. You know,
that O-line a lot of times let Jacobs get hit 2 yards behind the line of scrimmage, and that of course is insane no matter who's back there, even
I
Jim Brown.
The last time the Giants were a power running game was with Joe Morris. That was the last time we
I
don't think you got to go that far.
Derek Ward?
Yeah.
Derek Ward, who was over 240 pounds?
That was 2008.
Okay? Come on now. Earth, Wind, and Fire, they had a power running game. Trust me. You haven't been watching long enough.
What's that?
They had a power running game with Earth, Wind, and Fire. You don't remember those guys? Are you too young?
No, I remember them, you know, but I don't remember them dominating as much as
Are you kidding me? 2,000-yard backs.
Abdul,
1,000-yard backs.
Yeah, 2008 was a very impressive season for the Giants on the ground. That was following that 07.
Jacobs and Ward had over 1,000 apiece, and Bradshaw was the change of pace guy.
The Giants were actually the number one rushing team in the NFL that year.
They destroyed the NFL with that power running game.
They averaged nearly 160 yards per game.
I think 2008, I kind of blocked it out. Once Flacco shot his leg, I think I kind of just put a big
understandable, but if you go beyond that, you look at some impressive offensive numbers on the ground that season.
And you shouldn't black that out because that team, that 2008 team, is the best Giants team they've had
team.
in a long time.
I remember. Yes, totally.
It's a great team.
That's my 2 cents, man. Take care, guys.
You got it, Abdul. Appreciate the phone call. Yeah, we were talking about the 08 season, I want to say a few weeks ago, not too far along, where we were going back to that Panthers-Giants game where Derek Ward had over 200 rushing yards, where he was just running through the piles. That was a huge game that went to overtime.
It was a dominant team. It really was. And they were so much on their way to cruising to a second consecutive Super Bowl. It is what it is.
All right, let's move along. We want to hear from you. Your favorite offseason move, any other OTA topics you want to get to in as well. Mike is in Oakland. Mike, welcome aboard. What do you have for us?
Hey, it's great to be back on with you guys. That last discussion was great because, you know, we've talked a lot about the running game and, you know, people just, I think, we're forgetting that Will Johnson, who I think was going to be a beast for us. I mean, I watched a bunch of his film when we picked him up and the guy was just all muscle.
I know.
So both he got hurt and then Nikita Whitlock got hurt too. And I just remember watching the Rams game third quarter. I went back and looked at a note I made and watching Larry Donald basically dance around the linebacker who filled the hole and Larry went upfield to hit a little guy and we got stuffed. It was, you know, probably like 7-yard line or something. And I just kind of remember just freaking out and thinking, we got to have a tight end who can block. And so hopefully this year we're going to get that. And I think that last caller was right, like how many times it was just a linebacker, you know, solo tackle on our running backs last year, just too many times because we didn't have any effective blocking from our tight ends. And anyway, looking forward to that. I also just wanted to mention, you know, something you guys talked about last week, which is even though there's no contact, you can watch how people are moving. So as far as the OTAs go, you know, I'm really interested to see how Eric Flowers and Bobby Hart are moving, see what they did in the off season, and if hopefully both of them are going to be better against a speed rusher this year.
Well, I mean, that's certainly something I think you could pick up on during OTAs, but once again, the pads are not on, there's no contact, so there's only so much that you could take away. But you've heard Ben McAdoo mention that, you know, they have been pleased with the progress that the two guys have made, their dedication to workouts and so forth this offseason, and now it's a wait-and-see type of scenario. Once they put the pads on in training camp, I think that's when you're really going to get more of an indication of how far along those two players in particular have come.
Yeah, I think you'll be pleasantly surprised, as will all the media, when they finally get to see these guys out on the field at what Bobby Hart and Eric Flowers have done in their off-season training to improve their football skills. This will be surprising to a lot of folks, and it will be to the Giants' benefit.
Well, and just to piggyback off of that real quick, Mike, and I'll let you continue, the reason why, you know, you talked about their football moves, Paul, and you can only really get into that when you put the pads on and you see the technique, because it's one thing to get into shape, it's another thing to see where the technique has taken them.
Well, you can learn the technique and the moves away from here, but you can't actually apply them and see the results until you're hitting people.
Exactly, and that's not going to come until training
camp. Right. Yeah. What I'm telling you, though, is that the road has been paved for those guys to show some improvement. They've done everything they're supposed to do to show improvement in terms of their technique, and now they just have to go out there and actually do it. But if the road wasn't paved, then they'd have no chance to improve. The road has been paved. They're in the right direction.
Good.
I'm telling you.
Yeah, that's what I want to hear. I mean, we talked last year a couple times that, you know, I watched a lot of Flowers film. I didn't watch that much Hart film, but one thing that I didn't see is, you know, we were talking about martial arts training for Flowers, because what I didn't see is him cutting off the speed rusher and striking very effectively. It just, you know, he'd lean. So anyway, it's not, like you say, it's not just being in shape. He's got to use his footwork and his striking a lot better
to keep
these guys off. But, hey, I got to clear the air from, you know, get something off my chest about Victor Cruz. Because, you know, last year, you know, Victor was used on the outside, and he didn't produce that well on the outside, and so a lot of people said his career's over. But, you know, Victor Cruz was a Pro Bowl player playing the slot, and a lot of what he did well was he knew how to sit down in a zone. He knew how to get open. He was Eli's security blanket. So, you know, head coach's decision to play him on the outside and give Sterling Shepard as many snaps as he did in the slot, but, you know, like I said, I just want to point out that I think Vic's got more left in the tank. And this year we actually have the option of some true outside receivers and slot receiver combinations that I think are going to make the offense a heck of a lot more dangerous.
Well, that is true. Victor Cruz, from the very get-go, we always said, even at his best, he was the premier slot receiver in the National Football Conference, if not the whole NFL. You know, you could certainly make the argument. In Pittsburgh, they had a pretty good one out there in Hines Ward. But the bottom line is this. Victor may be able to squeeze another year or two out of his career, but it's not going to be on the outside. He's got to go to a team that needs him in the slot, because that's what he can still give somebody. He can't give them a high level of production out on the outside. His skill set at this point in his career is just not going to let that happen.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, I'm a fan of Sterling Shepard. I think he shows quickness, explosiveness. You know, everything I've read about him says he's a smart player, digs into the playbook like you'd want. That's all great. And but you know, last year playing him so much in the slot as a rookie, you know, I thought we had some options on the outside. And you know, what I'm looking for him this year is to get the feel of, you know, those holes in the defense. And he's got to you know, he's got to become that guy who can get us that first down, even if it's a 4-yard play, if it's a 7-yard play.
Mike,
you know,
keep in mind,
get in there.
I mean, I don't mean to cut you off, but if you go back to early in the season, and it did fall off a little bit, and it's understandable, Sterling Shepard at one point was leading the NFL in third down conversions because every time Eli Manning threw him the ball on third down, more often than not, I mean, he was up there. I want to say it was like 7 of 8 in terms of attempts versus completion. So they actually were relying on him, Mike, early on. He was finding the holes in the defense. And then, you know, as defenses catch up and try to take away the slot opportunity, maybe the opportunities weren't there. But I still think, ideally for the Giants, Shepard's the guy you want in the slot. And Marshall and Beckham are the two guys you want on the outside. And then we'll see how they try to work in some of these undrafted free agents and Dwayne Harris and Tavares King and Roger Lewis. But Shepard, he's being groomed, and he was being groomed as Victor Cruz's replacement.
Look at it this way. At his best, Victor Cruz was a better slot guy than Brandon Marshall ever would be. But at his best, Brandon Marshall's a better outside guy than Victor Cruz would ever be. It's just that simple.
For sure.
Yeah, you upgraded the outside, and then you also gave a rookie plenty of experience in the slot that he should hopefully pick up where he left off from his rookie campaign.
Yeah, it's always a trade-off, right? Is it, are you playing for this year? You build in for the next year? So, hey, you know, the coach sees him in practice, and, you know, I put a lot of trust in the coaches because I'm sitting on a chair. But, hey, onwards and upwards, you know, appreciate you guys, and go Giants.
Thanks, Mike. Right. Thanks for the phone call.
Want to mention one thing. You know, the Giants did bring in Shane Smith, a
fullback,
bruising fullback at 6'2", 247 out of San Jose State. I'm hearing a lot of good things about him already here in the offseason. And if you've seen him, he looks like the Incredible Hulk. I mean, this guy is absolutely cut out of the side of a mountain. Now, if they can find a way to keep him on the roster at fullback, then that does mean that Ellison would be exclusively a tight end. Then they wouldn't necessarily need to move him back into the fullback spot or the H-back spot. If Shane Smith shows that he can do everything that they need him to do, they might just say, hey, you know what? He's our fullback. And Ellison, you just go with the tight ends and don't worry about playing fullback. They might be able to do that. I'm hearing a lot of good things about Smith. The question becomes, though, and people said to me now in the last week as they heard us talk last week about having a thumper, can he be a thumper? Because he's certainly big enough. Well, you know, you go back and you look at his college stats, career, 8 rushes in 4 years.
Limited.
At San Jose State. The guy never touched the ball. He caught 21 passes and ran the ball 8 times in 4 years. Now, I don't know. That tells me nothing.
Of course.
Maybe the Giants have their thumper in that they find out during the preseason by handing him the ball. Maybe they find out he can run. Because they didn't give him the ball in college. Now, was that because he couldn't do it or because they had other plans? Remember, college coaches are in the business of trying to win for themselves. They're not in the business of making pro players.
Developing guys, correct. They want the job security. And Ellison, his numbers are even lower. I mean, he barely had. He had 1 carry in college, and then he had 1 carry with the Vikings. So, I mean, you really don't have both fullbacks currently on the roster. Don't have a lot of experience carrying the football. But, you know, Ellison does have a lot of experience in Minnesota being used as a fullback.
He does.
Because he was blocking the way for Adrian Peterson.
But this guy spent his full career in college as a blocking fullback. So if the Giants feel as though he can do everything that they want him to do back there, pick up the playbook, understand the protections, you know, if he's got that going, they might just say, you know what? We're going to keep a guy just to be the blocking fullback. And even if we only use him X number of plays, you know, he can enhance his value if he shows he can run the ball.
Well, there's 3 guys that I would watch out for playing in a fullback type of role on this roster. One is Shane Smith, who you just threw out, Rhett Ellison, obviously, and then my wild card is Matt Lacoste because of how he was utilized at Illinois. Now, Lacoste has to prove he can stay healthy, but I would not rule him out in being in that fullback position to block for running backs as well. It's one guy that they could perhaps toy with. Before we get back to the phone lines, the other thing that I wanted to add to the conversation based on what our last caller Mike was alluding to, it was on the Sterling Shepard point. And, you know, it's important to look at the draft this way too, Paul. When you draft players, it's not just about the upcoming season. It's about what they're going to do for me maybe within the lifespan of the rookie contract. For example, you know, Sterling Shepard, they wanted somebody to help spark the offense last season, but I think also part of the rationale was Shepard could be Victor Cruz's replacement. It's the same thing with Dalvin Tomlinson. Now, Hankins wound up leaving in free agency,
yes.
But we saw this before with the defensive tackles. It did fill a need by drafting the guy when they did, but it also was to say, hey, you know what? He could be a replacement for 3 or 4 years down the road when we wind up losing the guy that's currently starting ahead of him.
See, I think you think less about those things when you're trying to go for a championship now like the Giants are.
But see,
I could care less about 2 or 3 years down the road right now. This is the team that's built to win this year. They're going for the gold before Eli retires.
And I get that. But I also think that even if that's your short-term vision, for the sake of the salary cap, and for the sake of the way the NFL works, even if you rebuild, you don't just get rid of the entire roster. You still keep pieces that you build around. You can't simply think that, well, we'll worry about 3 or 4 years down the road. It's still important to say, hey, this rookie down the road can be our long-term replacement for this veteran free agent in 2 years. I still think it's important to have balance is what I'm talking about from a philosophical standpoint.
You always want to keep that in mind, and if a GM totally ignores that, he's a fool. I agree with you.
Yeah.
But I think the scales certainly in this particular situation are tipped in the win now situation.
And that's understandable. Let's head back to the phone lines. Charles is in New Mexico. Charles, welcome to the program. What do you have for us?
Hey, guys. How you doing today?
Doing well, Charles. What do you got?
Great conversations. I really believe that the fullback is going to make a huge difference in that offense. And from what I've read, Eric Flowers has really done a great job in the offseason, so I expect big things from him, and you guys will let us know that. I read today that Gerald Hodges is coming in for a tryout, the linebacker from the Niners. What do you guys think about him?
Well, that's based on reports that you saw out there. I mean, nothing official. The Giants never officially announced, you know, who they're working out and so forth. We actually talked about him a few weeks ago because there was another caller that wound up, Charles, bringing up his name. I mean, he's a veteran free agent who's still out there. He's had some injury history that you have to take into consideration, but when he's been healthy, he's been very productive within that San Francisco 49ers defensive scheme. So, I mean, it never hurts to bring in a player at this point if that does come to fruition, to work him out and see what happens. The other thing that I will throw out is when it comes to these free agents, you know, sometimes people want to just get an update on where that player is in terms of rehab, health, production, just to update their notes. You see that a lot during the season, and I'm not saying it's during the season right now, but normally on every Tuesday, you know, or depending on when the off day is for respective teams, they bring in various free agents to work them out so that they can update their notes and the scouts can get things up to date so that in the event somebody gets hurt, they may want to bring that player in. That's usually how things work. But to get back to your question about Hodges, like I said, when he's been healthy, he's been an extremely productive linebacker, especially in the tackling department.
I think what you want to keep in mind is that he's played in the middle. He's also played on the outside, so he has versatility as well as the experience. Now, this is a guy who did well with the Niners last year, a poor team, by the way, but did well, piled up some decent numbers. I think he had like 80 tackles. But here's the one thing you got to remember. He's now going on the circuit. I think what they say on Pro Football Talk, he's got like 8 or 9 teams or 10 teams.
Well, he already made a few visits, too, that have been reported previously.
He's making the circuit right now. So, apparently, you know, he's just trying to collect as much information as he can. Whether or not he does officially stop here or not, you know, we don't know that for sure. But he's clearly on a seek and search mission to figure out what's going on. And I think anytime you get one of those guys who is just hopping and bopping all around, literally making the circuit, bless you, by the way, I think you have to be a little bit leery that you think your team is going to sign him. Because he's clearly trying to figure out all of his options. And it's not like, you know, when a free agent visits one or two teams or visits one team because he pretty much knows that's where he wants to go. Brandon Marshall knew he wanted to be a Giant, and you didn't have to worry about him, you know, visiting anywhere else. That's a different situation.
I think that's also the case when it's May 22nd as opposed to when it's 2 or 3 days into the heart of free agency.
No
the
question.
Market clearly changes. And I'm looking over Hodges' numbers just a little bit more closely. And as I was alluding to earlier, he's coming off his best season. Why? Because he played 15 games. And he had never played 15 games in his career. He also had 3 sacks, which was a career high. And the tackles were just over 80, as Paul had mentioned. So when he's durable, when he's healthy, I think this is a very productive inside linebacker. So I don't think there's any crime in looking into it.
I think Paul was right. If we're up there in the top 15 in rushing and they give Eli time, I mean, I think this is the year they're going to go for the gold. But the middle linebacker position always scares me. And I know last week, Paul, I think it was you and John, we talked about the kicker position. Or was it you, Paul? We only have one kicker in camp, Rojas?
Yeah, Rojas is the guy. Jerry Reese did tell WFAN, I believe it was a few weeks ago, he plans on signing a veteran before training camp. The only veteran that I know of who has any type of substantial resume is Dan Carpenter, the former Bill. I don't know that there are any other significant resumes out there on the street among kickers.
Yeah, I think you said or John said this kid's got a big leg, though, Rojas.
I've known about him for months. He has a cannon of a leg. I knew about him last December when the Titans had him on their practice squad, and the Giants decided that they were going to go after him. But, you know, big leg in practice and big leg on tape doesn't mean anything when there's 5 seconds left in a game and you need to hit a 52-yarder to win it.
The preseason games are going to tell a lot. That's what it really is going to come down to.
Well, I appreciate you guys' job, and let's go Giants. Let's stay healthy, OTAs, and let's get ready for the season.
Okay. All right, Charles. Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for chiming in on the conversation. I'm looking over the free agent kickers right now. And Carpenter really is the only name that rings any bells. I mean, there's a few other guys on the market, but they're not proven in terms of their resumes.
No, he has an extensive resume, and that's about it. I mean, there's nothing else there.
Yeah,
unless
you
pull somebody out of retirement. Well, you know, somebody like Shane Graham.
Who may come in to just compete and so forth. I mean, let's be honest, there weren't many free agents to begin with. I'm looking at the market this past season, and a number of kickers just wound up re-signing with their respective teams. You saw Robbie Gold, he was with the Giants, he went to San Francisco. Nick Folk went to Tampa Bay to compete with their young kicker. Connor Barth re-signed. Greg Zuerlein re-signed, and Hauschka made the move from Seattle to Buffalo, which is why Dan Carpenter is still a free agent. So there was some movement, but there just weren't a lot of names out there, and that's just based on, you know, who's under contract and who's not. Let's head back to the phone lines here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. We've got Charlie in Portland, Maine. Charlie, what's happening?
Hey, gentlemen. Hey, Paul. Hey, Lance.
Hi.
How we doing, sir?
Hey, Paul. I could hear the internal scream all the way up here in Maine. A couple of days ago when Blunt got signed by Philly and we didn't sign him. You must have been sick to your stomach, were you?
Well, you know what? I understood where the player was coming from. You know, he obviously believes he was going to be the featured back in Philadelphia. With the Giants, he was going to be a role player. And what comes with being the featured back? More cashola. I understand why he went. I get it. I totally get it. Now, if he was real happy to come to the Giants and become part of a backfield and not the featured guy, and they could work out the numbers, I think he would have been a great fit because he's exactly what they needed. But you know what? It takes two to tango. And the players saw a better situation for him. And so that's why he went. And you know what? I'm going to be honest with you, and I mean this wholeheartedly. I'm one of those guys who always, you know, you ever hear coaches sometimes say, if the guy doesn't really want to be here, I don't want him. Well, that's how I'm looking at Blunt. If he really didn't want the role that the Giants had carved out for a player of his nature, then they're better off not having him.
Yeah, but don't you think it had a lot more to do with a minimum offer, minimum salary for a guy who scored 18 touchdowns?
Okay, but if you're gonna make him a role player, then you have to give him numbers that jive with that role. You can't give him bigger numbers.
I understand that, but why would you make him a role player? Why wouldn't you want competition and say, come on in, if you beat out Perkins, you beat him out.
That's
We're
not the style
the
of running game.
Back on the field.
Yeah, but you know what, my friend? That's not what the Giants offense is about. Their scheme,
yeah,
the way it's designed. Hey, look, you know what I think about power football. You don't have to argue with me on this, Charlie. We're the same. I would much rather they go to the power game, but that's not what they're doing. They want to go to the video game, Xbox kind of football. They've gotten a roster built for that. Therefore, the power back was simply going to be a piece to the puzzle, not the main featured guy. And I'm sure Blunt figured that out.
And why would you want to sacrifice reps for Paul Perkins at this point? I mean, you're still developing him. and you saw that he flashed late last season. So why are you now going to say you're going to take him off the field just to bring in LeGarrette Blount for one season? Yeah, Paul Perkins,
I'm not saying taking him off the field, but he would be the second back coming in. He'd still get his touches, but you know, I'm just saying, if Blount had beaten him out, then you know you could use him like you did last year. You know, he comes in, he's the back that comes in and changes the pace.
Well, but here's the thing, Charlie.
That's not happening. So you know, but Paul, I got to say this: I think the offensive line wasn't fair. I think they were poor. But if you're going from, I'll give it to you. Say they were fair. We got to go from fair to good. Then that driveway or that paved road that you got to do, you better be in gold, because how are they going to go from fair to good in one season? And just all of a sudden they're going to be, you know, all of a sudden they're going to be good. I just don't see it. I don't see it.
Watch, Charlie. Just watch. That's all I'm going to tell you. Just watch. You know, I remember before 2007. Every expert in this country thought that the Giants had one of the worst offensive lines, if not the worst in football. And by midseason, they were still talking that way. And the Giants' offensive line was shaking their heads and saying, I don't think these people know what they're talking about. And then they made the run. And they went into the postseason. And then everybody called them the best line in football. And they won a Super Bowl. So, please, don't believe what you've seen in the past. Believe what you see in the present. And when these guys get out here in August, I want you to watch.
All right, but do we have a plan B? If that doesn't work out, what is our plan B?
That's the bad news. It better work out.
Exactly.
It better work out.
Okay, guys, I'll let you go.
All right, Charlie.
All right, Charlie.
Have fun watching.
Yep.
OTAs.
Appreciate the call. I just want to get back to the running back situation. If Paul Perkins, remember, was the guy that a lot of people were calling for when Rashad Jennings was the starter. What I don't understand, Paul, is why is it now Paul Perkins has an opportunity to be the starter, and now people, I'm not saying everybody, but guys like Charlie are calling up and saying they want another option. That's what I just don't understand. Because Ben McAdoo, in a recent interview on WFAN, indicated Paul Perkins is in line to be the starter. We had these conversations about 5 or 6 weeks into last season that people wanted Paul Perkins to get more work. He was getting involved in a play here or there, and then late in the season, he finally gets the double-digit carries. We see the production increases, so now Perkins is giving the role, and now we're talking about needing another running back.
If they are going to feature Perkins, okay, they're going to want him to do a lot of the stuff that Rodney Hampton did when he first got here with the Giants, and he was more of a slasher. And remember, Otis Anderson was the pounder.
Yep.
Okay? And that's the way they're going to want to try to go here. Not the Hampton of his second stage of his career when he became a pounder. Rodney was one of the very few guys who I've ever seen transform himself from a quick, slashing, cutting running back who was an all-pro caliber player, who then became an all-pro caliber player as a pounder. Very, very few guys could do that. Otis Anderson did it himself, too. When he was with the Cardinals, that's what he was like. And they became a pounder with the Giants. Very few guys could do that and make that transition and still be at the top of the game. The Giants want Perkins to be more like the young Hampton. That's the kind of style that they're looking for. That's the kind of running game they want, the kind of offense that they want. LeGarrette Blount, I'm sure, took a look at that and said, okay, I'm not here to compete for a starting job. I'm going to be the role guy. I'm going to be the change of pace guy. I'm going to be the pounder. I think I want to do more than that. I can't blame the guy for feeling that way.
No, neither can I. I mean, it's all about also, in his mind, too, I'm just throwing out a hypothetical here. If you even get a low base salary, if you're LeGarrette Blount, Paul, and the majority of your contract is built around incentives, meaning if you reach this many carries, if you reach this many touchdowns, if you're LeGarrette Blount and you're going to a team with that structured contract and you know that you're going to maybe be the goal line back, you're going to maybe be the short yardage back, maybe you're concerned that you're not going to wind up getting that money because you're not going to have enough of an opportunity to reach those incentives.
Again, role goes in line with salary. It's all part of the deal when a player looks in the mirror and says, what do I want to do with my career? It's all part of the deal. I got something I want to go over with you a second ago. We had this conversation the other day. We were talking about the Cowboys defense. I do want to throw this out there.
Yeah.
I looked at the Dallas Cowboys starting defense in the playoffs last year. And according to our lads, who guys I have a lot of faith in, I really like those guys a lot, they've got the Dallas Cowboys projected starting defense week one of this season. there are only five guys who they project to be starting week one on defense who started the playoff game this past year. So that means six out of the starting 11 on Dallas's defense will be new, at least projected to be new, which is, as I said, half of their defense. I just wanted to throw
but
that out at you.
This is just from the playoff game. This is not necessarily during the course of the regular
season. That's based
season.
On the playoff
just
game.
Just the playoff game you're talking about. Yeah.
That's quite an overhaul. I only wanted to bring that up because we had that conversation. You rightfully so said, well, wait a minute. They're not all going to be rookies. They're not totally overhauling. I said, all right, you know what? Let me go back to the facts because you asked for the facts. Let me go back to the facts. And the projected starters, Collins, Hitchens, Lee, Scandrick, and Jones, are the only five projected starters from the playoff game last year who will start week one against the Giants. That means six new starters on defense. That's a problem if you're the Cowboys.
No, there's plenty of new faces. No, and I agree with you. My point was, and if I recall, the phone call that we had received late last week was the fact that their entire secondary is going to be rookies. And I disagreed with that sentiment because I said that even the new faces that are coming in are veterans. Nolan Carroll, he's a veteran.
He is
he's been
really
up and down.
Bad.
But the point is, that's not you're throwing in a new face in the defense, but you're not throwing in a guy that's never been in a game.
Okay.
Jeff Heath was a backup safety who actually has some starting experience on their team. He's in line to replace Barry Church, who obviously has moved on in free agency. J.J. Wilcox, they lost too. That was my point. My point was there's going to be plenty of rookies that they're going to have to play over the course of the season. No doubt about that. It's just initially I could see the veterans who are new faces are still going to probably get the edge in terms of the starting. That was my only point. But in terms of the playoff game, yeah, you could clearly tell there's going to be a lot of turnover on that roster.
Six out of the starting 11, in all likelihood, will be different when they play week one against the Giants. And, again, my experience in the NFL is that that's a big problem for a defensive coordinator, at least through the first month of the season, if not longer.
Well, I'm sure that's why part of the rationale is if you ask a lot of teams, well, maybe this could benefit the Giants, but they don't want to see their divisional foes so early in the season because they'd rather work out the kinks if they're working in new personnel.
Without question.
Right? I mean, that's at least my argument.
Which is why I could not be more expressive on Twitter when I said, folks, you want the Cowboys opening day. And in their building, it's like a gift certificate. They burn a home game. The Cowboys burn a home game with a defense that probably is not going to be on the same page. What more could you want?
You'd rather see a team week one that's infusing a lot of new faces because they've only had a few preseason games.
It's common sense.
As opposed to you see the team week five, okay, they've got a quarter of the season under the belt.
And then in the rematch, you get them in your building. Yeah. Well, when it counts during the stretch run in December, what more could you possibly want?
Well, that's why, like I said, in an ideal world, it would be great if you can get the divisional games a little bit later on in the season to benefit both teams. It's not to give an advantage once, you just benefit everybody.
No,
so that by the
way, I'm taking advantage
this season,
of the situation.
You're taking that. I understand that.
Darn straight, I am.
I'm looking across the NFL landscape. I'm not just looking at one matchup. Let's head back to the phone line. Steve is in Manhattan. Steve, what's happening?
Hey, how are you guys doing?
Doing well, Steve. What do you have for us?
All right. So one great point, I'd rather have Dallas right away while they have all the new faces and then have the experience of our team playing at home at MetLife for the second meeting.
Without a doubt.
As far as what I called for, I just wanted to touch on how everyone's overshadowed the run game because of the tight end addition and Brandon Marshall. But I just wanted to say how if you look at Flowers and Bobby Hart of how young they are, and they could have still been in college. So to have this NFL experience and people critiquing them, I think they're going to come a long way, and it's the now or never as far as how many years they've been on the team. So I just want to see your perspective of saying if this is the year and it doesn't happen to click, then what do we do from here? But I'm optimistic that they can make that big turn. I know all the work they've put in.
Year three is the show-me year. It's always the show-me year for a player who has potentially, if you want to use the word, underachieved. Year three is the show-me year where they got to step up and they got to show that they deserve to be what they are. And, you know, this is the time for those guys. There's no question about that. I would also add one other thing to you, though. One other thing about the Giant run game. We often forget that the receivers also help a 4 or 5 yard gain become a 9, 10, 11, 12 yard gain when they block off the edge and they take care of some guys downfield. Brandon Marshall is a very good run-blocking receiver. In fact, he immediately becomes the Giants' best perimeter blocker by stepping onto this roster.
Yeah, I mean, you think about guys
he's really
like,
good.
You know, Monty Toomer when he was here. I mean, he was a great run blocker.
Plex
up the field.
Was pretty good
Plex
at
was
it.
Good too.
Toomer
yeah.
was good at it.
It
the
helps.
Best the Giants ever had was Chris Callaway. I don't know if you remember Chris.
When you have those bigger
he
wide
was the
receivers.
Best ever. Tyree was good at it. You know, the Giants in the last couple of years, when they wanted to run the ball and they knew they were going to go outside, they'd bring in Dwayne Harris. Because they knew of all the wide receivers, he was the only guy who had a chance to really throw a block and help spring somebody to the edge. That addition, Brandon Marshall's addition, in all the other ways that he helps this Giants offense, don't forget he will help the running game. I'm telling you, you will watch him throw blocks, and he will knock smaller defensive backs out of the way on the perimeter.
And then I also think that, correct with an earlier phone call about not having LeGarrette Blount, that's okay. It would have been cool to have him, big guy, running through goal line situations.
Yeah.
But with the addition of, you know, Fluker and maybe even Biznadi getting a role or at least upping the level of competition, I think is going to really make, you know, very big gains as far as how they mesh and gel and work together. And Perkins, if you just look at the end of last year, you
yeah.
saw glimpses of great things with, I would say, lesser than average O-line, and then add the additions of Rhett Ellison as well. I'll take it off the air with that, but just if you look at what he did from his body of work from the end of the season to hopefully the better future of the line this year versus last, I think we can do great things on the line. Have a good one, guys. Thanks.
All right, Steve. Thanks for the phone call. And you look at, you know, what these guys have been doing in the offseason. You also look at the fact that Ereck Flowers is healthy. He doesn't have to deal with the ankle injury. He's not recovering from that. Dave, I still think we got the dial tone there on the line. Appreciate the phone call. But Flowers, getting back to the point, in terms of the ankle injury, Paul, you know, this is one of the first off seasons where he's not recovering from that, as I was mentioning. And, you know, that, I think, hopefully will give him a better opportunity to focus on the technique, focus on slimming down, focus on getting the footwork right and everything. So, you know, that's why this season, you know, the third year is so critical. And here's another reason why it's critical. Remember, first-round picks, and I know the Giants are going to have a little bit more time in this department, but, you know, you want to start to see whether or not it's worth picking up the fifth-year option on your first-round picks by the time you get to year three. Now, the fifth-year option is going to come after that fourth year, so you still
you
have another
season.
You love
to keep looking ahead,
well,
don't
I
you?
Do,
you've been doing it all show.
I know, because that – see, I don't think you can lose sight of that.
You can't lose sight of it. You're 100% correct.
Of those types of decisions, even while you're trying to win now. You can't.
I agree with
that's
that.
That's why I'm always keeping that in mind.
But you're putting too much emphasis on it.
Well, perhaps I am, but I think this is – listen, the and you know this very well, Paul. The evaluation period of a player never ends. You don't just wait for the fourth season to say,
no,
all right, let me see if this guy's worth it. It's continually going on. It's going on in practice, going on in games, going on in the offseason.
Let's put it this way. As we've discussed a billion times, the year three rule is always in effect for a guy who expects to have a lengthy and productive NFL career. Because if he doesn't get it done by year three, the odds of him becoming something substantial in this league dramatically decrease.
Because you want to see progress. You don't want to see moving in the opposite direction in terms of the player's development. Let's take a look at Twitter at hashtag Giants Chat. You can still give us a ring at 201-939-4513. We were throwing out, who do you think was the best offseason move or your favorite offseason move? That was our main question. We want to hear from you. Paul threw out re-signing JPP. I said re-signing Keenan Robinson. We have somebody saying that Brandon Marshall at JJ Campa 62 is a no-brainer. So he thinks the star wide receiver, bringing him in the mix, A.J. Marshall at A.J. Marshall 3. My favorite offseason move was first-round pick Evan Engram, who's a reliable option on third down and red zone that we struggled with last season. Then we've got at Advert Publi If Fluker blocks well and Engram runs routes as well, Ellison will destroy any rival so Perkins can emerge. And greetings from Mexico. Well, we thank you,
cool.
Jamie, from listening from Mexico. So he says that in his mind, Ellison could be an X factor, essentially, assuming the line holds up that Ellison, and this was, I believe, what Abdul, we were talking about earlier in the program, getting to that second layer of the defense with the assistance of a fullback. So Jamie would agree with that sentiment. Let's take a look at some of the other tweets. Freddie at FreddieJ_23. P. I totally agree with you. Bringing back JPP was the biggest offseason move. Also, bringing in Fluker was big, too. And that's something I think you could also throw out there and make a case for, looking to bring in more competition. And a guy that I remember was a former first-round pick.
You know, the Giants were very, very narrow-minded and focused on what it was that they wanted to do because they felt, hey, coming off an 11-win playoff season, we're close enough where we can absolutely positively cement ourselves as a contender if we take care of just these few little things. And so they didn't waste time, you know, going after other stuff. They focused in on exactly what they needed to get, and they got most of it done.
Let's go back to Twitter here. This is an interesting one. James at Lil_TNT32. He's going with two undrafted free agent pickups for the team. He says he likes Travis Rudolph, the addition, the wide receiver out of Florida State. And this is another name that I actually wanted to bring up. Jadar Johnson, the safety out of Clemson, who when we had a Clemson reporter on, we actually talked about him. He went undrafted. He, I think, is also somebody to watch throughout training camp and even OTA. So I would agree with James. I think those are two good players to watch. You know, whether or not they make the roster ultimately, that remains to be seen. But I do like those two names.
All right, so Thompson and Collins are your starting safeties. You got Andrew Adams, Raheem Moore.
Correct.
Nat Burhey's still on the roster, although, again, his inability to stay on the field makes him, makes
remember,
him to be a real
Cooper
question
Taylor
mark.
Taylor is a guy that comes to mind.
But that's five guys already ahead of Johnson. He's got one heck of a traffic jam in front of him if he's going to make this team.
Well, that's why I'd also be interested to see how they utilize him. Remember, I think the guys that are going to stick
on... Michael Thompson.
Michael Thompson's another
one. He's got six
guys
ahead of
him. And he's somebody that could be corner slash safety. But just like Nat Burhey, Thompson's another one that's got to prove he can stay healthy on the field.
Yes, he does.
So, I mean, I don't think Johnson's that far behind Michael
Thompson. Well, if you drop out the two guys who have had injury issues, drop out Burhey and Thompson, that's still four guys.
It is. It's on.
Four guys ahead of him.
Listen,
and I'll be honest with you. I like the fact that Raheem Moore's been in this league because what do you want out of that backup spot? You want a guy who's got the smarts, because if he's got to play, he better know what he's doing.
A veteran, correct. Then remember, the Giants had brought in Brandon Merriweather not too long ago, so they have a track record of sometimes bringing in veteran guys just to have them on the roster. But remember, the point I was going to bring up, if you're going to make that point about Jadar Johnson, I can say the same thing about Travis Rudolph. He's got a lot of guys in front of him, too, in terms of the competition.
Yeah, but you'll keep more receivers than you will safeties.
Well, yeah, but we're only talking about maybe six versus five.
Probably four safeties. Four safeties, probably six receivers.
So that's an edge of two in the
two's
right receiver department.
On a depth, when you're in the depth
well,
track,
yeah,
two
but,
is a lot.
But also, let's also consider Dwayne Harris. Remember, we're given the top three. We're not even talking about the top three, Paul. Okay,
well,
we're starting at four.
It's
going to
be tight. It's going to be. You're right.
Okay.
It's going to be tight, no matter how you look at it.
That's all I'm saying.
It's going to be tight, and I know this. Neither one of us are going to make it.
Well, I think that's a fair assumption. I don't think anybody would argue that. Let's take another glance or two at Twitter here as we near the end of the program. Appreciate everybody for chiming in on social media. This one actually just came in. John at JMF8013. My favorite offseason move, and this is a name that I threw out earlier. He says drafting Dalvin Tomlinson to replace Hankins fills a big hole. And I would agree. I think after Keenan Robinson, that was going to be the other one that I was going to throw out because I'm also looking at need, impact of the player in year one. I think that's something that you could certainly make a case for. And we had talked about that there were a lot of other names that you could throw out. This is not one simple answer. Loki, at Mr. Loki B., I think all the moves were great. Full faith in this team thanks to management. Best move, he says, actually. Here's a different take. He says the best move was not signing LeGarrette Blount. You don't hear many people making a case for that.
How about that one?
So he's got no complaints. And we've had plenty of conversations. I know John and I have had plenty of conversations. You were of the mindset, and I don't disagree with the mindset, that there was room for that thumper back if you could carve out a role and the player would be content with that role. I was of the mindset I could live with that, and I also could live with them working with the running backs in-house. And it appears right now that's what's going to happen.
Yeah.
and they'll see what they can get out of these guys in different situations. You know, Wayne Goleman is a player to watch. You know, what type of role does he take on during the course of his rookie campaign? So, you know, the position battles, we're focusing a lot on the players, and that's been the heart of the conversation, Paul, but the position battles is something also to start to hone in on during OTAs, and it's about the depth chart. You know, we talked about the backup safety. What about the backup corners? You know, the cornerback position, who's going to emerge after the top three? Is it Valentino Blake? Is he going to be a guy that makes a name for himself? Or is it going to be some of these undrafted players that they brought in? That's, to me, a position also.
Oh, there's no
question.
We
haven't talked a great deal about.
There is no question. You got to look at those corners. You know, Lance, I think the funny part about all of this is, you know, here we are now, the 22nd of May, and, you know, we're itching for training camp to start because, let's face it, until training camp starts, even the mini camps and stuff, you can't get a lot of the physicality that you need to provide you with the appropriate evidence to start making legitimate debates or having legitimate debates about these kinds of players and positions. I mean, once we start seeing these guys every day in August and once we start seeing preseason games, we're going to be in a better position to sink our teeth into whatever we feel about these guys. Right now, it's still so much like Monopoly money. It's like, what is it? You know, and that's frustrating to me. I don't mind telling you, folks.
Yeah.
I can't wait till the season starts.
Well, you're looking a lot about stats and resumes as opposed to substantive answers on the field.
Projections.
Exactly.
You know, what you think might happen, what you believe might happen. I could tell you as much as I want to say about the offensive line improving, until they do it, they didn't do it. Got to do it.
Well, this is laying the groundwork, laying the foundation all week long. We'll be providing the latest updates with respect to OTAs. Paul and I will be back up and running with Tuesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. You can always give us a ring at 201-939-4513. And keeping the tweets coming at hashtag Giants Chat. A lot of good chatter on social media. So we certainly appreciate everybody for tuning in, listening, and interacting with us. Enjoy the rest of your Monday. We'll speak to you tomorrow right here on Giants.com.